We're on Daf Kuf Yud, and we're starting with Ba'ir Sura Lo Achli Kach. Pedisa Achli Kachal. So we have Machlokas Minhagim in the city of Sura in Bavel. They did not eat Kachal at all. Even Tzli, Rashi says, even after Kriya, they were very machmir about kachal. In Pumpadisa, they were mekil, they ate kachal, they did the kriya, as it says in our Mishnah. Rami Bar Tamri, so we're now going to have a whole story about somebody from Pumpadisa who shows up in Sura. And his name is Rami Bar Tamri, to who Rami Bar Dikhule, he has another name. And he was made Pumpadisa. Ikla, he finds himself in Surah B'mali Yom HaKippur, and Erev Yom Kippur, when the city is being Marve Besuda, they're eating Basar. Now the Maratz Chayis wants to know, why is it that the Gemara has to tell us these facts, that it was Erev Yom Kippur? And he says the following, that normally we have an Issa called Basar HaMis'ale Min HaAyin.
Right.
And we're going to soon see that the Kachal, since it was thrown out, was Mis'ale Min HaAyin. So the question is, how could they eat it? And the answer is because the statistics change on Erev Yom Kippur. Since they do a lot of Shechita on Erev Yom Kippur, in order to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, therefore, if you find basar on Erev Yom Kippur, here's the exception to the rule of basar shenisal min ha'ayin, since rov basar that's found on that day was Jewish meat that was shechted properly, and therefore we don't have to concern ourselves that maybe it was goyish meat because it was nisal min ha'ayin, and that isu doesn't apply on Erev Yom Kippur. He also quotes here the Maram Shif.
Isn't there, I remember hearing, isn't there a tshuva of Moshe Feinstein about frozen meat, whether that's misalim in the ayin or not? Does that sound right? Some of this, that was, I think that issue came.
Right, but this kal, I don't think would fit that category.
No, I don't think it was frozen.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Now he quotes another possibility that on Erev Yom Kippur, They used to shecht ofos, birds, not bakar. And the Gemara wants to teach us that even though everybody's busy shechting ofos, and therefore l'chora, in the case of a kachal shel behema, this should really be basar shenisal min ha'ayin, because there's very little shechita of behemos. The massive amount of shechita was ofos. But nevertheless, Rami Bar Tamri relied on the fact that the kholim were mutarim because he knew the minug of Sura, where he found himself on that erev Yom Kippur, was not to eat kachal. So he relied on the fact that you can assume that the kachal that he finds is from the Jews, that Shecht the Kiddin, had it been another day of the year, then it would have been problematic. But he could be told that the kachalim that he finds on Erev Yom Kippur came from the Jews, that Shecht the Kiddin, and they got rid of the kachal because in Surah they didn't eat the kachal. Because if they were goyim, goyim would not throw kachal into the rubbish pan.
We're talking about kachal he just happened to find.
No. We didn't read the story yet, so take a look. We're going to read the story now and we'll see where this kachal came from. It says that it was Erev Yom Kippur. Afkinu kuli alma lekachal chilnu. All the Jews would remove the kachal from the behemos after they were shechted, and shadinu, and they threw them in the waste basket, because in Surah they didn't eat kachal, and certainly not in Erev Yom Kippur. Azal ihu, So this individual, by the name of Rami, he had two names, let's just get his names. Either his name was Rami Bar Tamri, or call him Rami Bar Tikule. He went Naktinu, and he picks up, he gathers together these cholim, achlinu, and he eats them. You get the impression that he may have been a poor person. So what may have been rubbish for somebody else, for him was a full meal. Aisula kami d'Rav Chisda. They were not happy with his behavior, because how can you eat chal? In Surah we don't eat chal. So they brought him in front of Rav Chisda. And Rav Chisda was meant to punish him, or in some way castigate him for what he did. Now it's interesting, the history here, that after Rav and Shmuel died, Rav Huna was Rosh Hashiva in Surah, and after Rav Huna died, then a few years later Rav Chisda became the Rosh Hashiva of Surah. But in the interim period between the death of Rav Huna, who was Rosh Hashiva in Surah, and the replacement appointment of Rav Chisda, during that interim period, many of the scholars of Surah went over to Pumpedisa in order to study with Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda was the chief, the Rosh Hashiva in Pumpedisa.
Rabbi Yehuda or Rav Yehuda?
Rav Yehuda. And this Tamri, since he came from Pumpedisa, he was a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda. So there was a 2-year period of time after the death of Rav Huna when the people in Surah were studying in Pumpedisa, that yeshiva where Rav Yehuda was the Rosh Yeshiva. And 2 years later, Rav Yehuda dies, and then they appointed Rav Chisda to replace Rav Huna in the Rosh Yeshiva, as Rosh Yeshiva of Surah. So then the Talmidim went back to Surah. So apparently the story that we're about to read now occurred either when Rav Huna was still alive, or after Rav Chisda replaced Rav Huna a few years later as the Rosh Yeshiva in Surah. But those who were local Pumpedisais, they were still loyal to the tradition of Pumpedisa, and they would still learn in Pumpedisa. Now here we have a member of Pumpedisa's yeshiva, and he finds himself in Surah. We don't know whether he intends to remain in Surah or not. That's going to become clear as we go along, Amirtz Hashem. And they bring this Tamri fellow in front of Rav Chisda. He's now the Rosh Yeshiva, and they accuse him of violating this Isur of eating chal. And it could be that at this point they tie him up and they're about to punish him, I don't know. But in all fairness, they turn to him. Amalei Rav Chisda turns to Rami Bar Tamri, and he says to him, Am I Tavid Achi? Why do you do such a thing? We don't eat chal. Amalei. So Rami Bar Tamri says to Rav Chisda, Me'asra de Rav Yehuda na. I come from Pumpedisa, where the Rosh Yeshiva is Rav Yehuda. De Achal, and we have the custom of eating chal, which only reflects the din of the Mishnah. Amalei, Rav Chisda says to Rabbi Bar Tamri, the Leslof, don't you know the Mishnah in Psachim? And this was the last thing that we did yesterday, if you recall. Nosnim olav chumrei hamakom sheyotza misham, chumrei hamakom shaholach misham. That a person goes from one place to the other, he has to carry with him on his shoulders the chumras of his locale, his original locale, and he has to pick up the chumras of his destination point, where he finds himself. So you found yourself in Surah, and you have to therefore pick up the Minhagim of Surah L'chumra. Don't you know that Mishnah? Amalei, so Rami, to defend himself, says, I don't have to be Machir Chutz L'Tchum Achil, right? The Tchum of a city is up to 2,000 Amos around the city. I was beyond that point of 2,000 Amos. I'm not bound by the Minhagim of that city. And therefore, even though in Surah they don't eat chal, I was outside the city limits, outside the tchum of the city, and therefore I'm allowed to eat chal. Fine. So now Rav Chisda starts interrogating this Rami. Ubamet v'sinhu, you can't eat raw chal, even according to your minug, that you're allowed to eat chal. Chal is saturated with milk. You have to first cut the chal and then you have to roast it. Now, your chutz l'tchum, where did you have wood for roasting?
This is roasting?
Right, roasting. Tzlia, it's called in Hebrew. Now, according to the Ramban, here noted in the footnote, Rav Chisda wanted to cause Rabbi Bar Chama to mess up a little bit in the Dvar Halacha, because Rav Chisda was still upset about the fact that Rabbi had not accepted upon himself the minhag. So he asked him all sorts of questions, and even though technically there could be answers to all these questions, but nevertheless, again, because right now Rami Bar Tamri is sort of like an unknown, if you follow what I mean. The only thing we know about him is that he came from Pandisa and he's eating chal in Surah or outside the bounds of Surah. We don't know that he's a scholar. So at this point Rav Chisda is still, you know, put up your dukes. He's still trying to see if he could trip up this Rami fellow, because so far Rami defended himself and he said, well, I'm not bound by the minhag here because I was chutz l'tchum. But now he's leading up to a question here about whether or not you're allowed to use as fuel wood that you find outside of the tchum of the city. And we'll see why that's a problem. Amalei, Rabbi Bar Tamri responds to Rav Chisda, what did I use to roast my chal? Bepurtzenei, which are called chartzanei anovim. So when you have grapes, there's certain parts of the grapes, maybe the stems and so forth, which do have the status of grapes, but they can be used as fuel. You can burn them and you can roast on them. So I found these chartzanei anovim right next to the vineyards outside the city. And that's what I use. Now, are you allowed to take grapes off a vineyard outside the city? Well, there are two halachic issues. Number one, if those vineyards are owned by goyim, then dilma miyayin nesachavi. It could be that these chartzanim were asur ba'na b'toras yayin nesach. How could you not worry about that? Amalei, once again, Rami defends himself, and he says, "Li'achar shneimasar chodesh havu." These chartzanim were dried. They dried up over a course of a year, and it's not also mishum yayin nesach. So here you have to know, which I don't know, a sugya in Avodah Zorah on Daf Chof Tes about chartzanim, and the law is the following. If these chartzanim are lachim, they're still wet, and they haven't dried yet, asurim. And the Gemara says there that it's up to 12 months, it's still considered moist. And once it's moist, it still has the status of chartzanim. Yeveshim, after a 12-month period of time, these chartzanim dry up, and they lose their identity. They're no longer considered chartzanim. And the Torah prohibits chartzanim of Ovdei V'Kochavim, but that's only lachim.
But where in Avodah Zarah is this? I'm sorry.
Chof Tes Amid Beis.
Okay.
Now we have a second problem. Okay, fine. Maybe you've solved the problem of Yayin Nesef because these chartzanim are yaveshim after 12 months. But Dilma de Gazel Havi, do you have a right to just go into someone's field, you know, take his grapes or his chartzanim? They're owned, and that's an iser of gezel. So he answers, Omer Le, Rami defends himself, Yeish Bailim Havi. This was already after Yeush. Why? How does he know that it's after Yeush? The Bailam gave up hope. De kadachu bahu chilfei. that these chatzanim were already growing like moss, you know, grass, which means that they were already spoiled. They were like offar. They were like the ground. And apparently the owners couldn't care less about this because it has no value to it. You know, when you think about it, look at Rami's desperate situation. He comes to Sura. He has nothing to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. We're going to soon see that he barely has clothes to wear. And he has to scrape out from the garbage the chal that they chucked out. He has to go chutz l'tchum to eat it. And in order to roast it, he's got to find these chartzanim that are 12 months old, that are full of moss, that are absolutely despicable. You know, like, why didn't anybody invite him for a Sudas Erev Yom Kippur kind of thing? You know, this was... Anyway, the story goes on. Chazia delo avimanach tefillin. Apparently in those days, you wore tefillin the whole day long. And Rami is not wearing tefillin. So Rav Chisda notices this. Amalei turns to Rami and he says to him, "I time alone minchas tefillin." Again, he's trying to figure out, you know, is this Rami on the up and up? He should be wearing tefillin. Amalei choli me'ayim hu. Again, another desperate indication here for, you know, poor people who don't eat properly, like him, who has to dig up the chal, they get stomach issues. The Omar Rav Yehuda, and he quotes his Rebbe Rav Yehuda from Pupadisa, choli me'ayim p'turi patur min ha'tefillin. Now let's understand. If a person has stomach issues, then he should not be wearing tefillin. When it says patur min ha'tefillin here, it doesn't mean that he's allowed to wear tefillin if he wants to be pious and be mekayim the mitzvah on a voluntary basis. No, he's absolutely prohibited, enjoined from wearing tefillin. And that's the halach of Choli Me'ayim. They don't wear tefillin, period. Now the Gemara does tell us about Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, that he also had stomach issues, and yet he would wear tefillin, but he would make sure that he would take off his tefillin whenever he had to go to the Beis HaKisei, and then he would come out of the Beis HaKisei, and then he would put them on again. And Tosas says that even though Choli Me'ayim are p'turim in ha'tefillin, that's because as a general rule, there it's impossible for a person to be zayir, to be careful about what we call nekiyas haguf. If he has stomach issues and he's going constantly in and out of the bathroom, he's not going to be able to control himself. The only exception to that rule was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was he had such a minig of kedusha, of sanctity, to such an extreme that he himself, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, despite the fact that he was a choli me'ayin, he was able to be absolutely careful and guarantee that his goof was naki for wearing tefillin. Now here I want to share with you an insight of the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer says the following: Rav Chisda knew very well that there might be all sorts of excuses or reasons as to why Rabbi Bar Tamri was not obligated in tefillin at that moment. But what Rav Chisda wanted to know is, if you're really such a Talmud Chacham, and that's the way you seem to present yourself, why weren't you machmir on yourself? Even if you're technically potter from tefillin, you should still take the opportunity to put on tefillin on a voluntary basis. So Rabbi Bar Chama's response was that he's a choli me'ayim. And a choli me'ayim doesn't even have an option to wear tefillin on a voluntary basis. There's no lifnim mishus ha-din. A choli me'ayim is also l'hachmer al atzmo. We're not finished with the Chasam Sofer yet, but I want to read the next line in the Gemara. Chazia de lo avi ka rabbi chuti. Again, look at this desperate situation. Rami Bar Chava is not wearing tzitzis. This is amazing. Now, apparently it was a classic beged. When you wear a beged in those days, it was four-cornered. Today it's a little more rare to have a four-cornered beged, but then it was common. And there's no tzitzis on its four corners. How could that be? Omalei. So Rav Chisda turns to Rami and he says, "My time of leslach chuti. Why don't you have tzitzis on your beged? Amale, Rami responds, Talizu she'ulahi. This is a borrowed talis. Again, the desperate situation of Rami Bar Tamri. He doesn't have his own clothes. He's wearing borrowed clothes. Okay, what does that have to do with tzitzis? The Omer of Yehuda, here we turn to Kuf, Yudam and Beis, Talis She'ula Kol Shloshim Yom Ptura Minat Tzitzis. For the first 30 days that you borrow a beged, even though it has four knuffos, you don't wear tzitzis. And Rami is telling Rav Chisda that I'm still within that 30-day period after since I borrowed the talis. So Rav, the Chasam Sofer adds a certain point. He says Rav Chisda knew that it's very possible that there are any number of reasons why Rami Bar Chama did not have a chiv to wear tzitzis on his beged. For example, it might have been a beged that's miyuchad lelaila, if you have a begotten that you wear only at nighttime. But he asked him, why wasn't he machmir on himself? A Talmud Chacham should always try, if he can, to accept upon himself a mitzvah, even when he's exempt from the mitzvah. And Rami Bar Tamri had to answer him that this talis is she'ula, and therefore he's not allowed to be machmir al atzmo. And why is that? Because if he attaches tzitzis to this beged, then when he returns it to his bailim, then the bailim are not allowed to take off the tzitzis. And the reason for that is that once you create a heftz shel mitzvah, you can't remove the tzitzis unless they get spoiled. They disintegrate. But other than that, you have to leave the tzitzis on the beged. And that could cause a loss to the bailim. The bailim might have had different ideas as to what to do with this beged. Maybe they wanted to wear it at night, and a night beged you don't have to wear tzitzis on. Then they would want to remove the tzitzis, but they're not allowed to do so because I would have put on the tzitzis and used it as a beged shel tzitzis. So again, in every case, Rami is responding to Rav Chisda that I don't even have the opportunity to be machmir in these mitzvahs. Fascinating pshat of the Chasam Sofer. Now, here we want to mention a Tosfos on the top of Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, and the pasuk says, just to give us some background, Gedilim Tasa Lechol Arba Knafos Ksusecha Asher Techasimba. The Gemara says Ksusecha Shelcha. You have to own the beged. However, the Chachamim instituted a mitzvah derabbanan of tzitzis on a beged that's not yours if and when it's in your possession for 30 days. Beyond the 30-day period, 31, then you have to put tzitzis on the beged. And the reason for that is because it looks like it's his own beged. Now, it's on the outside, I mean, everybody sees he's been wearing this beged for 30 days. So Tosfos wants to know, what's the deal if you put on tzitzis and attach them to a beged she'ula, a barred garment, and it's less than 30 days? Does he make a bracha on such a talis, or does he not make a bracha on such a talis? And the final conclusion of Tosfos is that he's allowed to make a bracha, just like women are allowed to make a bracha on a mitzvah seishas man grama, even though they're pturos. And therefore, the opinion of Tosfos is that the halacha of she'ula is a p'tur, just like Zman Grum is a p'tur, but if he wants to be machmar himself, he could have. And this is not the Chasam Sofer that we discussed earlier, that Chasam Sofer says, because it's a barred garment, he's not allowed to put on tzitzis. Tosfos would assume that he could put on tzitzis. Or, alternatively, Tosfos could agree with the Chasam Sofer if he gets reshus from the Baal HaBayis, or if he received a talis she'ula with tzitzis on it. Tosfos says then he can make a brach on those tzitzis on a voluntary basis. In any event, what Rami Bar Chama had was a beggar that he borrowed. It had four knuffles. It didn't have tzitzis on it. And according to Chasam Sofer, he would not be allowed to put the tzitzis on. Had he received reshus or a beggar dalet kanfis, then according to Tosus, he would be allowed to even make a bracha on the tzitzis. That would be a whole different story.
We should for what? To put the tzitzit on? Or
right. If, let's say, for example, I call up the owner and I say, look, I'd like to put tzitzis on your begad. Do I have your okay?
Oh, okay.
You know, are you going to lose anything by it? And he says, okay, fine. Then, in that case, Rami would have certainly done so, and he would have been machmer on himself to be mekayem a mitzvah optionally, voluntarily. Now, the Amshel Shlomo rejects this shitas hatosis, and he says, you don't make a brach on a tal sheula. Now, the Rush says that if you borrow someone's talis and it has tzitzis on it, for sure you're allowed to make a bracha on it, because he lent it to you al das that you would be able to make a bracha, and that's called the matan al manas lahachzir. So therefore, if al pidin you cannot make a bracha as long as it's not your talis, but in this case where he lent it to him with tzitzis on it, his kavanah when he lent it to you was to be makne to you, so it's your ksus, it's a matan al manas lahachzir, and therefore it's ksuscha, and you can make a bracha on it. Adahachi, they were discussing this whole issue, aisu lahu gavra, in the meantime Rav Chisda gets called out to deal with the following case. They brought him a man, Telohavi Mokir Avua Ve'ime. He was guilty of mistreating his father, or maybe it was his mother, one of the two, or maybe both, and he violated the mitzvah of Kibud Av Va'Em. Now, here we have to know, there are two, in Halach, there are two types of punishments. There's a punishment for violating a lo saser, that's called Malkus, and then there's a punishment which is a little bit similar but different. It's also Malkus, when you have to compel a person to fulfill a mitzvah say, he refuses to fulfill a mitzvah say. So kaftu means they took this man and they tied him to a pole and they started giving him lashes in order to force him to be mechaber his parents. And this is not the malchus that you get for violating a lo saser, but rather the malchus that are given to Bezdin for kfir, in order to force a person to fulfill a mitzvah saser. Now, whereas in the case of malchus on an onesh, for violating a lo saser, this is only a lo saser. In the case of mitzvah saser, he's not high malchus as onesh, but he has malchus as kfir, as we said before, to compel him to comply with the law and fulfill the mitzvah say. So if a person refuses to fulfill the mitzvah say, we have to beat him up until he fulfills the mitzvah say. Now, in the case of a malchus shel onesh, which means he violated a law in the Torah, then we need what's called umdun. Umdun means we have to send him for a physical checkup, and we have to figure out how many malchus he could survive. And we don't give him more than a maximum of 39 malchus. So it could be less than 39 in a case where the doctors evaluate that he's not capable of the full 39 malchus. However, in the case of malchus of kfir, then we could continue endlessly to beat him up, to give him malchus lashes, until finally he accepts upon himself to fulfill the mitzvah.
Since he can cut it off at any time, it's up to him.
Correct. And at any time he makes a declaration, I'm a kabbal on myself to mekayim the mitzvah, at that time they stop beating him up. Until he does so, they continue beating him up. And there's no end. We're not going to stop at the number 39. You know, in that sense, the kfir for a mitzvah say is even more chamur than malchus. In any event, there's a Nesivus that he quotes here who says that Al Koshal Kfir al mitzvis Mutelas al Kol Adam. This is mine, by the way. Who's responsible to mete out these malchus for someone who refuses to comply with a mitzvah? Anybody. Not just Bezdin. It's not Din and Bezdin. Again, this is the radical chiddush of the Nesivus. If we had time, we would study this as a separate topic. In a case of Al-Kov Onesh, there's no such thing as Malkus for violating a law outside of Bezdin. Therefore, if a person is Mevatel Mitzvah Sev Kibud Av Ha'Em, and they tied him down for the purpose of hitting him, and not because of an Onesh on a Losaseh, but rather for the non-compliance with a mitzvah of Kibud Av Ha'Em, a mitzvah Saseh. So the kind of malchus that we're talking about in our sugya, therefore, is malchus shel kfir, and the point is to get him to that level, to that point to which he declares, "I'm ready and willing to do the mitzvah." And it's, hey, this guy is so rebellious that he's willing to take the lashes, and he's taking it, but finally he can't tolerate it anymore. So he says, "All right, I'll do the mitzvah." Now, Rami finds out about this right before they start giving him the malchus. Amar lahu, Rami bar Chama says, Shavkua, let him go. We have no right to force a person to fulfill the mitzvah of Kibud Av Ha'Em. Why not? The son, you have a brisa, and you get the impression that Rav Chisda back in Surah was unaware of this brisa. Mitzvahs I call mitzvah seisha matan schara b'tzidah. Whenever the Torah explicitly tells you what the reward for the mitzvah is going to be, ein bezdin shalamata mushar maleh. Bezdin down here is not obligated to force him to be mekayim the mitzvah. And in the case of kibud av ha'em, the Torah says kaved es avich v'simech l'man yarichun yomecha al ha'adama she'ashem al kechon el sein loch. And the Torah specifies the schar. Whenever the Torah specifies the schar for a mitzvah, then there's no din of kfir.
So that's what b'tzidah means?
In other words, b'tzidah means in the next pasuk, like right next door.
Okay, thank you.
Now, what's the logic here? So Rashi says the following, that the reason why the Torah explicates the schar for the mitzvah is to tell you that if you don't do the mitzvah, your punishment is going to be that you're going to not receive this great schar. Therefore, Bezdin is not able to force him to do a mitzvah because the Torah itself has added a method of enforcement, and that method of enforcement is by telling him, buddy, if you don't fulfill this mitzvah, you're not going to achieve arichas yomim. So Tosis, that's this second Tosis on the daf, says the following, that Bezdin Shalamata, our Bezdin, Kofin al mitzvah, can force a person to do mitzvahs, Shenemar bo lav, af al pi shematan schor mafush betzida. When it comes to a low taseh, we're talking about onshi Bezdin, then it's irrelevant whether the Torah specified schar or did not. Only in the case of mitzvah saseh, then if there's matan schar b'tzidah, Bezdin is not gonna do kfir. And he explains the following: Kasher Bezdin achrichim adam l'kayim esay. When Bezdin compels a person to fulfill an esay, that's called kfir. So let's say he's about to violate a lotas. Then we have the din of lahafrish me isu. We have to prevent him from implementing that avera. When it comes to afrosh me isu, there's no difference whether it's matan schar b'tzida or ein matan schar b'tzida. If the Torah, even when the Torah mentions and explicitly tells you what the reward is, that's as far as losas is concerned. But once we get to an essay and we want to force a person to fulfill that essay, then we have to ask ourselves whether that essay is matan schar b'tzida or not. And then he quotes a whole slew of Rishonim who base themselves on a Yerushalmi that a mitzvah seish matan schar b'tzida in Bezdin not net noshim aleh im lo yichvu. The Yerushalmi has a whole different view, and according to the Yerushalmi's opinion, although Bezdin is not taken to task in event that they abstain from forcing a person to do a mitzvah, but they do have license to force a person to do a mitzvah of him yirtzu, and if they want to, lichvos, to force him, harshus biyadon. And the Rambam paskens like these, we showed him in the name of Yerushalmi. And here we're left with a real question, because why did Rami Bar Chama say, you got to let this guy go, this fellow who didn't respect his parents? Bezdin could decide, even in the case of Matan Schar B'Tzida, if they want to, they can be kofah him. So maybe Rav Chisda to make that decision. And for whatever reason, they decided, yes, we will force him to do this mitzvah. And even though it's Matan Schar B'Tzida, nevertheless, they can force him to do the mitzvah. They don't have to force him in Matan Schar B'Tzida, but they're allowed to. And that's the Yerushalmi. So he quotes here, Ritzvah, who says, all Rami meant to say to them was that they don't have any obligation to force him, as they do in the case of other mitzvahs, because this mitzvah, Kibbutz Avim, is different because it's Matan Schar B'Tzida. Amar Leis, Rav Chisda, at the end of this whole long give and take, says to Rami Bar Chama, Chazina, I see Lach about you, the Harifas Tuva, you're very sharp. Amar Leis, so Rami Bar Chama takes the compliment very seriously, but he says, no, you don't know how sharp I am. You have no clue how sharp I am. He Havis Basrei, the Rabbi Yehuda, if you would join me in Pumbedisa, where I'm learning under the tutelage of Rabbi Yehuda, Achvina Lach, then I can show you Churfai, how sharp I am. Now, the Sam Sofer is bothered by this. We know that a Talmud Chacham is meant to be an anav. He doesn't brag about his harifus. You know, in my childhood, we would have said he doesn't have 5 meter cabbage jangling from his lapel. Da'akom shal tamini chacham latznias chachmasam. The derech of a Talmud Chacham is to hide, to be very humble, and conceal his greatness. And there are many, many proofs for that. Furthermore, I don't understand why did Rav Chisda have to make this comment that Rami Bar Chama, you're very, very sharp. It's almost as if he was jealous of him. You know, wow, you're just brilliant. What's going on? So the Sam Sofer quotes his Rebbe, Rav Nosson Adler, and he has a whole new pshat in what was going on over here. And Rav Nosson Adler says the following. I'll pose it to you as a question and answer, although he just gives the answer. When is a person considered to have really reached his potential in chachma, in wisdom? Is it A or B? Is it A, as long as he's studying under the tutelage of his Rebbe? Or no, as long as he's under his Rebbe's, you know, his Rebbe's influence in a close relationship, he doesn't blossom to his full potential. Only after he leaves his Rebbe and he develops on his own, only then does he reach what he calls Sof Chachma, so his ultimate potential in Chachma. So which is it? Says Rav Nosson Adler, I'm not sure how he knows this, but I can explain it psychologically. Ein adam magia l'sof chachma, so a person doesn't reach his full potential, kozman as long as he's under the shade, in other words, the protective shield of his Rebbe, he's learning by his Rebbe. So Rav Chisda says to Rami the following, I see that you are very, very sharp, and therefore I conclude from that that you already reached what we call Sof Chachmaso, in other words, you're independent of your Rebbe. And now you showed up in Surah. I have every reason to believe that you said goodbye to Rabbi Yehuda. You finished your term with Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe he was there for 40 years, I don't know how long. Vidaitcha, now you decided that you want to go at it on your own, and that's what you've done, and you've achieved this tremendous level of chachma, which goes beyond what you would have reached if you would have remained in Pumbedisa. Therefore, it makes sense that you're going to settle down here in Surah. And now if you're going to settle down in Surah, I go back to my original question, and that is, why are you eating Chal? You now are a permanent resident of Surah, and you're bound by the Minhagim of Surah, And it makes no difference whether you're inside the tchum or outside the tchum. You know, outside the tchum helps if you're a pumpadisai and you happen to find yourself in surah and you want to eat the chal. But if you've already, you know, left your Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda, you're on your own, and you've come here to be with me, Rabbi Chisda says, here in my yeshiva in Surah, then you certainly are guilty for not having bound yourself, having being machmir to be more careful and avoid eating chal. So Rabbi Bar Chama turns to Rav Chizn and he says, you know what? On the contrary, don't think Al Tizbar Del Shayach Harifus Yoser Mikach. You think that I've reached my full potential. You're looking at me and you hear all my comments and my sharp answers to your questions. So you think I've reached a great level. You know what? Come back with me to Rav Yehuda, with me to Pumpadisa, and then you'll see how much sharper I can be and how much more I can develop under the tutelage of Rabbi Yehuda. And then my potential will be even that much greater because I'll have reached a great level. When I continue learning with Rabbi Yehuda, I haven't exhausted and gotten to the point where I'm independent, where I'm ready to go out on my own because I have so much more harifas to learn from my Rebbe Rabbi Yehuda. And then the harifas that you'll see afterwards when I finally do go out on my own is infinitely greater than what you're seeing today. But adayin daiti lachzor etzel Rebbe, I still have intention to go back to Pumpadisa to be with my Rebbe Rabbi Yehuda and study with him. V'lo l'shtakeh kan, I'm not interested in settling in Surah, with all respect. V'lachein, and therefore achalti kchal kimin hogo shel Rabbi Yehuda. I'm still connected to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, where is the piece that I wanted to share with you about the poverty of Rabbi? Okay, I'm hoping I'll find that. It's a beautiful piece also. In any event, let me add the following. We're learning today a lot of Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer asks the following question. Where is the great Harifus that Rav Chisda found in Rami Bar Tamri? After all, Rami Bar Tamri just continuously explained why he was following the law and not violating the law. Says the Chassam Sofer, Rami Bar Chami had a problem. He didn't understand why Rav Chisda asked him about tefillin and then afterwards asked him about tzitzis. To wear a beged without tzitzis, a four-cornered garment, is a bittul essay. And it's an active bittul essay. In the case of not wearing tefillin, that's a bittul essay, but it's a passive bittul essay. So the kasha that Rav Chisda should have asked first would be, why aren't you wearing tzitzis on a four-cornered beged? Every second that you're wearing it, you're violating the essay. All this loveless was in the mind of Rami Bar Chama to try to figure out the sequence of Rav Chisda's kashas. So based on this kasha, Rami Bar Chama came to the conclusion, the reason why Rav Chisda didn't object to Rami Bar Chama wearing this beged four corners without tzitzis, because maybe it's a beged laila. And a ksus laila is p'turim min tzitzis. Even though an adam chashim should be machmer on himself, but Rami Bar Chama understood that Rav Chisda holds that kol ha-potur min ha-davar v'yoseu nikra hejot. Now that statement is very complicated. What I mean is there are two categories and you have to know when they're radically different and when this one applies, when that one category is that you're potter from the mitzvah, but we encourage you to fulfill the mitzvah on a voluntary basis. There's another category in which if you would go beyond the law, you would be considered a hejot. It's not at all commendable. And Rami understood that in the case of a ksus laila, of a ksus laila, which is pturim min atzitzis, it's not roi lahachmer al atzmo, but rather it's nikra hejot. And ein adam rashoi lahachmer al atzmo. Again, I'm not answering the question why. Offhand, I would have said that even a ksus laila, it's a nice thing to put on tzitzis and wear tzitzis. You have that option. Perhaps the reason why it's a hedge is because we're afraid that maybe you'll make a bracha on it. I don't know. Whatever the answer to that question is, that some sofer doesn't give us that answer. So therefore, again, Rabbi Bar Chama figures out why Rav Chisda didn't comment on the absence of tzitzis. Now Rabbi Bar Chama asks him about tefillin. And Rami Bar Chama Rami Bar Tamri could have simply answered that he's mitzta'er. Again, this also has to do with the poverty of Rami. If we get back to that, hopefully we'll find that. And a mitzta'er is potter ben atfilin. There are only two mitzvahs that a mitzta'er is potter on. One is sukkah and the other is tefillin. V'lo yitzarch lefarech a mitzta'er b'choli me'ayim dafka. He didn't have to point out that he was a choli me'ayim. He just could have said simply, he's a mitzta'er. That one word would have certainly answered the question of Rav Chisda. V'yafal pichein, Rami Bar Chama went ahead and he said, what kind of tzar am I suffering from? It's choli me'ayim. At that point, Rav Chisda understood that according to Rami Bar Tamri, an Adam Choshev, he wants to be very pious, he's allowed to be machmir on himself. So even if he's a mitztayer, he can put on tefillin and somehow overcome that tzar. But why did Rami Bar Chama have to go a step further and tell him that he was a choli me'ayim? It's in order to explain why he wasn't machmir on himself. So Rav Chisda understands that from the perspective of Rami Bar Tamri, Rami Bar Tamri's perspective was, I should be machmir on myself, and the reason I'm not wearing tefillin l'chumra is because my mitzvah is a mitzvah of choli me'ayim. Oh, now Rav Chisda says, wait a minute, are you telling me that you're machmir on yourself even when the Torah says you're potter? You're not a hedjot, but it's recommended, and the only excuse you had why you weren't machmir in tefillin as a mitzvah is because you were choli me'ayim. Then I don't understand, says Rav Chisda. You should be consistent. You should be wearing tzitzis l'chumra. Even if it's a ksus laila, you should be encouraged to wear tzitzis on a voluntary basis. So that again, even though Rav Chisda himself might not have encouraged anyone, and certainly not Rami Bar Tamri, to wear tzitzis on a ksus laila, because he would hold these a hedge, but you, Rami Bar Chama, who are of the opinion that when the Torah exempts you from a mitzvah, you should go ahead and voluntarily fulfill the mitzvah, why aren't you wearing tzitzis on a beged laila? So what was Rami Bar Tamri's answer? Ah, this is not a problem of beged laila. It's a different problem. Namely what? It's a talis she'ula. He borrowed the talis. And if he borrowed the talis, he's not allowed to put tzitzis on the talis without the reshus of the bailiff. The bailiff might not, maybe he would object to wearing to putting the tzitzis on. Once the tzitzis are on, you can't take them off. So now, with this dialogue back and forth, Rav Chisda started to ask him about tefillin. Rami Bar Chama understood that according to Rav Chisda himself, if you're potter, you're a hedjot. But afterwards, when he saw that Rami Bar Chama wanted to force a person, beat him up, because he wasn't being mekayim in the midst of Kibbutz Avim, which is Matan Schar Betzida, he says to Rav Chisda, Lanicho, let him go. Because Bezdin are potter mikviyah and mitzvahs. And even though we've said earlier that Bezdin could decide voluntarily that they want to force a person compelled to do mitzvahs, but not Rav Chisda, because Rav Chisda holds that once you're potter from Dover, if you do it, you're a hedgehog. So therefore there's no room to voluntarily force a person compelled to fulfill a mitzvah, and therefore let him go. This, says Rav Chisda, was the great harifus of Rami Bar Chama, Rami Bar Tamri, that Rami Bar Tamri had this whole beautiful pilpul to understand why Rav Chisda didn't ask him any questions about tzitzis. He only asked him about tefillin because he thought that I, meaning Rami, would be a person who would wear tefillin on a voluntary basis, and even if I'm mitztar, I should still wear tefillin. But the answer is, I'm a holy me'ayim, and a holy man is not allowed to wear tefillin. Then he asked him, well, what about tzitzis? It's a ksus laila, but according to your shita, Rami Bar Tama, you should be wearing tzitzis on a begging laila. The answer is, tal shul, and I had no possibility. But, says Rami Bar Tama, you, Rav Chisda, are forcing a person, beating him up in order that he should be mekayim the mitzvah of matan schar b'tzid, though. You don't have that option, because you don't recognize the possibility of voluntary optional mitzvahs. Why are you beating him up? And at that point, Rav Chisda said, wow, I see the charifus of this individual. And that's the end of this sugya. The only thing that I am missing, which bothers me, is I wanted to share with you about his anius. Let me just give it a minute, just in case I can find it. Okay, we spoke about that. Begin Amyuchad Lilaila, and then we spoke about Itala Sha'ula. We spoke about Minhagim, and we said he has to pick up the local minhag, but he goes out of the Tchum, and there he's allowed to do it. We spoke about two categories of Malkus and Bezdin. One is as an Onesh for a violation of Losasa, one is a Kfiyah Ala Mitzvah. And we spoke about why is it that we don't force a person to fulfill a mitzvah, which is mitzmatan tzchara betzida. And we mentioned that according to Tosfos, we said that that the bezin shalmata normally would be kofal a mitzvah, but that's only in the case of a lotasa, but not in the case of an essay of matan Torah, matan tzchara betzida. Fine, and that we discussed. The only thing I don't find here, that business. One more time, and then I'll let you go. It's just bothering me to no end that I don't find this. Again, the reason why he was able to roast chal outside the city limits with these chartzanim, they were dry, and therefore there was no Iser Yayin Nesach, there was no Iser of Gezel, it was after Yeush. Afal Pisha Cholimeyan Peturvina Tefillin. Rebbe, we said, was the exception. And we said that Rav Chisda thought that he would get Rami Bar Tamri would certainly be machmir on himself, even if he was potter, and therefore he always had to justify why he wasn't machmir. He wasn't allowed to be machmir on himself. In any event, what I don't find here, there's a long presentation, very dramatic, about the poverty of Rami. And why is it that they didn't invite him for a meal on Erev Yom HaKippurim? And that I'm not finding now, so I'll have to apologize and pick that up another time. I'll probably find it as soon as we finish, but right now I'm not finding it.
Okay, I'll find out the key with